The St. Louis food and beverage industry continues to make its mark on several fronts, and fittingly, on St. Patrick's Day, we'll point out that beer has always been one of them, increasingly so as craft breweries continue to multiply. Two new ones are in the works in St. Charles County. Abby Spencer's the head brewer for Third Wheel Brewing Company, which will open in St. Peter's in the coming weeks. Robert Schoengert is co-owner of Two Plumbers Brewing at Arcade in St. Charles. They join me in studio with Catherine Claney, managing editor of Sauce Magazine. Its 2017 annual guide to beer shows the St. Louis brewing industry just keeps rolling along.
St. Louis has a long and storied history of beer, but since the mid-2000s, local breweries have absolutely boomed in this city. According to the St. Louis Brewers Guild, there are more than 50 area breweries opening or open in St. Louis in the area. And every year we dedicate an entire issue to our local beer scene, our annual Guide to Beer. And one of the things we featured this year, because there are so many new places opening, was the class of 2017. And this is the dozen breweries that are slated to open this year, which is the most we've seen since the beer boom began in the mid-2000s.
Is there any danger of too many opening? I mean,
not as far as I'm concerned.
Maybe the owners might think differently,
but
that's a lot.
St. Louis is a thirsty town. They really, really love beer. It's an approachable beverage with a wide range of styles. There's usually something everybody can like, and I think at this point, we're just going to keep growing.
Abby, how do you feel about that?
I feel pretty much the same way. I know St. Louis City, St. Louis County is really, really full these days. But I feel like there's always another spot for, like, another niche brewery that could be opening up something new, something exciting. There's so many beers available. There's so many interesting, unique things coming out these days that a new brewery can find their own place. It's not difficult. But obviously for us, we're pretty excited because we are moving out a little further to kind of explore these uncharted territories out west.
You mentioned St. Louis City, St. Louis County, but now you're moving, as you say, to St. Charles County.
Yes, yes. So we'll be located in St. Peter's, out in St. Charles County. We'll be the first ever St. Peter's brewery.
Robert, you're doing the same thing.
Yeah, only in St. Charles, so just slightly up the road. I had recently moved back out to the county and kept driving back out to the city to go to beer festivals and stuff, and kind of noticed there was an empty hole in the area. So
pardon the expression, but is St. Charles then virtually an untapped market up until now?
Yeah, I'd say so. Trailhead's been there for a long time, but past that, there really wasn't much until Friendship opened in Wentzville.
And then there's Exit 6.
Exit 6.
But St. Charles County is also such a huge space. So you have Exit 6, which is significantly further away from Trailhead, which is a significant difference from Friendship. And I feel like the handful of us opening up kind of mid-county are kind of filling in some of these gaps. But there's not many of us still, so.
How much variety can there actually be in beer?
How long do we have? It's huge. BJCP, which is kind of like a guideline for beer styles, lists over 150 styles. And that's only the official ones, not mentioning the ones that are more off the cuff, made up by the imagination of the brewers.
Yeah. How would you describe your style, Robert?
Wow, that's a good question for us. So we have a pretty small system, so our style is kind of whatever we feel like making that day. With a two-barrel brewery, if something isn't selling well, we can just not brew it again and move on to something else. So we have the advantage to play around a lot.
Again, I'm the neophyte here. I enjoy drinking a glass of beer, but you know, aside from what's in it, it's barley, hops, water, and yeast, and that's pretty much it. But apparently not if there are all these different varieties.
Yeah. So one of our big beers that we'll be excited about putting out right when we open up is a 5.5% stout with chocolate and vanilla. So there's just step one of adding hundreds and hundreds of different ingredients that you could think of. Pretty much if it's edible, you can add it to a beer.
It's a great comparison is to look at it like you would wine. You could say there's just wine and there's red and white, but there's so many different varieties depending on your grape and where it's grown and the terroir. Mm-hmm. And beer is the exact same way. Depending on what you put in it, those four base ingredients can create an infinite number of things.
I saw your eyes, Catherine, light up when she mentioned chocolate.
Oh, yes.
there seem to me, Abby, to be an increasing number of women who are into this area. Brewing organizations have been formed. What's going on here?
Yeah, I myself got into the beer industry probably about 5 or 6 years ago. At that time, there were, I would say, significantly fewer than there are now. But I think with just the growing times, with the expansion of the industry as a whole, you're going to see more and more women in the industry. And I joke around with people these days when I tell them, yeah, I'm the brewer for the brewery. And they're like, you? And I'm like, is it my hair that throws you off? What is it? So I joke with people, you know, it's 2017. It's a thing now, women and beer. So it's still not 50-50, but I think that just comes along with some of the challenges within the beer industry. But it's coming along. We have tons and tons of amazing women brewing in the city right now. So
I think you and Robert both started as home brewers. Is that correct?
Yes.
What's the difference, Robert, between home brewing and doing it on a commercial level?
For us, it's actually not too big of a difference for our jump. It's really just scaling up your recipes and, you know, you've got to add more ingredients. I think if we got any bigger, though, that would bring some more changes to it.
Yeah, so scaling, it's pretty close to exactly what Rob said, like literally just percentage-wise moving your ingredients from a small batch to a larger batch. Some of the slight differences is your efficiencies, both from your malts and your hops. So you're probably going to get a much better efficiency on the larger system. So I probably, on the scaling side, won't have to use quite as much ingredients in my larger system as my smaller one. The challenges there, though, are figuring out those exact numbers. So, you know, over the first few weeks of brewing, we'll have to really hone in, you know, exactly what is my alcohol going to be based on how much malt I'm adding? What is my hop utilization I'm going to get based on the hops I'm adding? So that will be one challenge. In the beginning, I think I know what's going to come out the other end, but I'm not 100%. So,
are there limitations on the amount that you can brew?
Just in terms of batch size or in terms of
volume?
Yeah, absolutely. So each one of us have purchased, you know, a brewing system, whereas Rob was saying his is 2 barrels. Third wheel will be a 7-barrel system. So that comes out to about a little over 200 gallons of beer. And so at any one time, the most I can produce is that much. So
For over what period of time?
So one batch of beer takes about a day to make, and then it will go into a fermenter, which will take several weeks, depending on the style of beer. So on average, I would say, you know, from brew day on day one through, you know, serving, give it a month and month and a half probably.
And that's where the limitation comes in over this period of time.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I know I was just talking to Rob about his woes of having maybe not quite enough space as he thought he might need.
Yeah, so we just had a soft open day yesterday, and we're quickly discovering that we're selling beer faster than we expected to. We knew there was a hole in St. Charles County. We didn't think it was quite as big as we did. So we're not even quite open yet, and we're already looking into buying more equipment.
Why the limitation at all?
For us, it was cost. Brewing equipment is pretty expensive, and it goes up really quickly. Our little entry-level system, gosh, I think we were $50,000 in on our equipment. And then that, to go up a couple more barrels, almost doubles the cost.
But there is a regulation which puts a limit on how much you can brew. That's coming from the state, I assume?
For the amount of time, no.
I don't think there's necessarily a regulation on how much we can brew. So, for example, every brewery in town pretty much decides based on their budget, their resources available to them, the space in their building, how big of a system that they want. But then once you submit, you know, there will be certain regulations based on that equipment, you know, how much you're telling the state, the government, how much you're brewing at any one time.
There is a taxation issue. So I don't remember the exact amount for to be called a microbrewery. It has to be under, let's say, 150,000 barrels a year. Mm-hmm. So like Anheuser-Busch, not a microbrewery because they make way more barrels than that. I think with our capacity, we'll be at like 280 barrels a year. So it's not even anything we're worried about.
Right.
But you could run out.
Our biggest concern is running out of beer.
you mentioned earlier on, and we should certainly squeeze this into the discussion about beer, Robert, and that is that there's an arcade component to what you're doing.
Yeah, so we've got probably 38 or so retro vintage video games and pinball machines. So something to do besides just enjoy the beer. Now you can enjoy the beer and kill aliens and things like that.
Catherine, we've talked about this before, this surge in the arcade aspect of restaurants and now the microbreweries.
I think the last time I was discussing this with you, it is a growing trend, the arcade bar, arcade brewery concept. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of fun because it does give you something to do besides sit around and drink. And there are bars that have board games and things like that. But this is just kind of a fun throwback to 80s and 90s childhoods, which, let's be honest, those are the people out drinking now, people that grew up during that time.
Statistically, it's almost exactly the same demographic of the people that are remembering fondly the arcades they used to go to are at that craft beer demographic of the right age and disposable income and such.
Do people get better at the arcade games the more they drink or not?
They seem to be less concerned about how bad they're doing. I don't know if they get better, though.
I think it's more the feeling of nostalgia than actually trying to go for that high score.
Yeah. Nobody's been mad yet that we had video games. So.
One of the big things in the beer industry has been, for the last generation, has been light beer, low-calorie beer. Do you guys get into that at all?
Nope.
Yeah, no. I don't think we're concerned at all.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely will have some lighter beers that are significantly lower calorie, but that's not based on the need for lower calories. It's just based on our desire to seek out a beer that's maybe more drinkable or what you might call more sessionable. Those beers naturally will come out to be less alcohol and therefore most likely less calories. So. Mm.
The idea with craft beer, and I think the resurgence of the beer in the last 10 years, has been going back to focusing on flavor and making a good product. And a lot of those light beers tend to just be kind of flavorless products that are more focused on calorie consumption. And what these guys are doing is really creating a flavorful, deep product that really gets you to explore other styles of beer.
Catherine, do you know, in the time that you've been doing this sort of thing, how the big boys are responding to these craft brewers?
And you guys may be able to jump in on this. From what I've seen, the bigger labels like Miller Coors and AB InBev are pushing their limits, and they're also buying some craft beer operations. Mm-hmm. So there are some bigger craft beer operations in, specifically I'm thinking the Northeast and the Southwest, that have been picked up by those big conglomerates and added to their portfolio.
Anything to add to that, Abby, in terms of, do you sense any pressure from above, from the big players?
I mean, I completely agree with what Catherine said. You know, you do see some of these craft breweries being purchased by some of the larger breweries. You also see segments of these larger breweries that are creating, quote-unquote, like craft brands. Mm-hmm. So within their own company, pushing out some, you know, in the past, you never saw one of these larger companies making an IPA. In this day, both, I would say, Miller and AB both have a portfolio of IPAs now. And I think that is their reaction to this growing craft industry. On the flip side of that, I will say being in St. Louis and the St. Louis region, Anheuser-Busch is a pretty big sponsor of a lot of our activities in the region. So we do have them to say they do sponsor a lot of our festivals and events. They bring in a lot to our region that us little guys can, you know, gain from as well.
And if people are drinking beer, ultimately it can be good for them because they'll drink some of their beer from time to time as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Robert, if I understood correctly the conversation before we went on the air, you came here from someplace else. Is that correct?
I actually grew up in St. Charles. I lived here in St. Louis for a while, and then I moved to Tampa to go to school for animation. A weird transition to owning a brewery.
But
I got kind of burnt out on it. It's heavy hours doing that stuff. So I had a lot of time in a cubicle behind a computer. and I really wanted to talk to people again.
I guess I misunderstood your time in Tampa, thinking you were from there. But you'd also mentioned that there's no craft brewing going on there.
There wasn't there when I was there, and now it seemed like a year or two after I left, some breweries. It was just a big explosion, just like most major cities have had a big craft beer explosion, mm-hmm. but. Some real good ones in Tampa have opened up.
But Catherine, St. Louis is really at the top of the hill when it comes to this.
We're definitely on the upper part of the hill. There are some cities that are really have paved the way for people, for brewers here in St. Louis to do what they do. I'm thinking of like San Diego and Portland, Oregon and Maine, honestly, and Denver. This is where some of the biggest craft breweries have started, Stone and places like that have been around for 20-30 years, and they really started that movement. But St. Louis is definitely, I think, on the upswing of all of that. We've really grown not only in quantity of breweries, but quality and styles and varieties. There's something here for just about every palate, whether you want a light sessionable beer or you want something barrel-aged and funky and weird, depending on what you're into.
Yeah, Abby, do you think the popularity here is because of our beer history?
I think that's definitely a part of it. I think we have a lot to say, a lot of thanks to both Schlafly for that. Schlafly was really our first big craft beer emergence. And then after the sale of AB to InBev, we saw a lot of new breweries opening up. We had this big resurgence with our big guys these days, so being Perennial, Civil Life, Urban Chestnut. And so I'm not going to speak to that correlation at all, but I do think we have a lot to thank to AB for kind of setting the groundwork, Schlafly for really coming out and being our first craft brewery here, and then the rest of them, you know, later on down the line.
Well, let me throw this out. I have heard, and I have no way of knowing it's true, that the craft brewing industry here picked up with the InBev transaction, because a lot of people were ticked off that a foreign company was coming into town and taking over AB. Catherine, you've ever heard that?
I've heard that, and I wouldn't say that it's a direct causation of why the craft beer scene grew. I know that there were some people who did leave AB and got into the beer scene here in St. Louis. But
including
I think
Billy Bush. It's not a craft beer, but he got into the beer
business. He did. And I think a lot of what the beer scene is in St. Louis is that it is so approachable. And when you see these new places pop up serving a product that you're familiar with, mm-hmm. you're curious and you want to step in and check it out. And I think that's the biggest thing for me is with the addition of craft breweries, it starts feeding on itself. People started liking it at Schlafly, then Four Hands, Urban Chestnut, Perennial, those guys opened in 2011. People got to really know them, and then it just started feeding on itself. And I think that's what people really responded to.
It kind of made people pay attention to the industry, too. Before it was just, you know AB because you are in this town. And when the merger happened, it was in the news, and you start thinking about beer more, so then you start paying attention to the other beers around and kind of wondering, what do those taste like? So you might pick up something different. And people that hadn't been thinking about it before and just went in and got the same old thing, it was more on their minds, so they started branching out.
And as Catherine indicated earlier, a new generation is coming into the picture, too, and in significant numbers. And they like beer.
Yeah.
They do. I think beer was like one of the first things that people drank in their college days, whether it was it was a low alcohol or low calorie beer or whatever. But I think
and expensive as well.
Right. Yeah. And so you go and that's your sort of gateway drink, whereas wine can be a little intimidating, or cocktails or hard spirits can be a little overwhelming if you're not careful. Beer was a really good gateway product for a lot of people.
Well, we're sitting here making this small talk about beer, and I've been waiting for Abby to crack a six-pack that she brought along with her. While she is doing that, Robert, let me ask you this. Maybe you don't know, but how is today's beer different than the beer of 150 years ago when the Germans came to St. Louis, or longer ago than that, when the Germans came to St. Louis and started brewing beer?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to try and do my best to answer this. I'd say we definitely, just the methods it was made are similar. Yeah, I don't know.
Abby, do you know?
Just going to stumble on the radio.
Ingredients were significantly different. And also, pre-Prohibition, you had a corner brewery.
Mm-hmm.
Every neighborhood had their own brewery. And everyone was brewing. There was their small pub, and they all were brewing their beer inside in their small pub. And then Prohibition happened, and then that's when all those went by the wayside and went away. So I think from – I don't know if your question was more for, like, brewing technicalities, which I can't speak too much to other than I know there were a lot of different ingredients being used, but – as a business as a whole, I think we're seeing our trends drifting back towards pre-prohibition with having our neighborhood pubs and beers.
What I was thinking of is the taste. Would we recognize a beer of when Adolphus Busch came to St. Louis, would we recognize that beer as pretty much what we're drinking today?
I think depending on the style, you absolutely would. I don't think Adolphus Busch put chocolate and maple syrup in his beers, but, you know, some of these styles are hundreds and hundreds of years old, and beer itself is thousands of years old. It was one of the first products that man created fermentation-wise. But when you look at like a classic Pilsner or a classic lager or Belgian sours, those have been around for hundreds of years and are styles that we're just bringing back that maybe haven't been around for a long time.
Yeah, there's definitely a resurgence in styles that used to be around and kind of fell to the wayside, and now people are bringing them back to try new things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like these quote-unquote dead styles. I brought in a Berliner Weiss today, and the style was gone. It's a originally German style, and I know that even in St. Louis, they were drinking Berliner Weiss styles pre-Prohibition, and then Prohibition knocked kind of, you know, a lot of these smaller breweries out. The big guys just went to these, you know, lager styles. And in even Germany, this style almost died. And then the Americans came and started this craft beer movement and this huge resurgence of beer. And we were just looking anywhere and everywhere to find something new and interesting. And I think you see this, these styles that we hadn't seen forever popping back up these days.
What have you just poured here?
So I just poured, so since Catherine got kind of excited about the chocolate, I went ahead and poured the chocolate. So this is a 5.5% stout. That third will be serving up when we open up. Just 5.5%. So it's light, pretty easy. Has a little bit of lactose in it just to give it a little fuller body. It has chocolate nibs in it. So it's like the raw form of chocolate. And then vanilla beans. So
you definitely get the chocolate taste out of it. Mm-hmm. Really, very good. I didn't think I would ever like this because I'm a traditionalist mm-hmm. when it comes to beer. But a couple of years ago, I tried pumpkin beer. It wasn't even really by choice and loved it. It was like eating pumpkin pie.
That's great. Yeah. That's the idea. That's the exciting thing for me as a brewer is I talk to people all the time that say, oh, I don't really drink beer. And I'm like, have you tried much? And a lot of them have only still tried some of these like mm-hmm. larger lagers or light beers. And I really believe there's a beer out there for everyone. And I think I'll stand by that more firmly when I get my mom to drink a beer.
Sometimes that is a challenge.
Yes.
My wife wouldn't touch it, but
yes.
with the chocolate, maybe I can.
I think there's a beer out there for everybody. And the fun part is you can go to a place with a very small system like Two Plumbers, and you're always going to have something different because you're still playing with recipes and seeing what's available. So even as a beer fan, I can go there and try a beer and like it and then maybe come back and get to try something completely different.
Yeah.
Or you can go to a place with a bigger portfolio and find a favorite, but then also get to try three different styles and figure out, do you like hoppy? Do you like bitter? Do you like sweet? Do you like chocolate? And figure out what styles work for you.
How do you like this, Robert?
It's good. I enjoy this. We have a strong competition in St. Peter's now.
But that is good.
It is good. And it'll give me a place to drink besides my own brewery. So no complaints.
One other question I wanted to get to was the issue of temperature in beer. I lived in Germany for 6 years, and they drank beer where they called it Kellerkalt, which means the temperature about what it would have been in the cellar, maybe mm-hmm. around 60 degrees. And that they think Americans drinking beer as we do, very, very cold, are crazy. What's your take on that?
So I think every beer style has its appropriate temperature. I think we're kind of known for drinking very cold beers because we're known for drinking these more adjunct style lagers that are very, very nice served at 31, 32 degrees, mm-hmm. right there at that really cold point. But as we get into more flavorful beers, the more you can open up that beer, the warmer that you're willing to drink it, the more flavor. And I think the consumers have learned this. Just working in bars and in the beer industry lately, you find that people are more and more educated about how to drink their beer and how to get the most out of their beer, whether that be glassware, but even more importantly, sometimes temperature. You don't want to drink the stout that I'm serving you right now at 32 degrees.
You're not any of the flavor.
You're not going to be able to taste the chocolate. You're not going to be able to taste the vanilla. But now that we're sitting here and it's 48, 50 degrees, suddenly the beer opens up. You get a lot more aroma from it, a lot more flavor. And I think people are really honed in on this these days.
What about carbonation, Robert? You know, again, I'll go back to my days in Germany. They, as you well know, make a pretty good beer or beers, but they don't carbonate. We do in this country to preserve it, is my understanding of it. Do you and your operations, do you carbonate it?
Yeah, we do.
On the carbonation side, it also goes back to a style thing. A lot of your big, heavier beers are going to be low, not as carbonated. And again, it's the idea of like kind of opening that beer up, more flavor coming through. And just in general, the density of the beer itself is not as friendly to these big bubbles if it's a big, thick, heavy beer. In general, each style has like kind of an appropriate level of carbonation. We will be carbonating all of our beers, just because that's how I like my beer. But there are plenty of styles lately around town that I've been seeing coming out that are either really lightly carbonated, especially these more wild, sour, funky beers, sometimes considered like almost like a table beer, a little bit served, a little bit more still. And I think you're going to start seeing this more as our craft beer industry grows and us exploring alternative methods and techniques.
The German beers that are imported into this country don't taste anything like they do in Germany because of that carbonation. And I know the Germans who come over here to drink the Lohnbräu or whatever just can't believe how much different it tastes and how less good it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those things. Okay, well, let's wrap this up. Where do we go from here, Catherine?
Well, just as far as what's next in St. Louis beer, in addition to the 12 new breweries that are slated to open in 2017, we have expansions that are in the works as well. Charleville Brewing from St. Genevieve is opening a second brewery in the city. An Earthbound beer is moving from its teeny tiny little space on Cherokee to a massive multi-level space down the street. In addition, other breweries that have recently moved or expanded, the URB is a new spot in from Urban Chestnut. Four Hands expanded its tasting room in the last few months. Second Shift moved to a new location on the Hill, and Side Project Brewing opened a new brewery in Maplewood. So literally every month there is something new going on, which is great. And then trend-wise, we're looking for clean ferments in lagers or something we're seeing pop up a lot lately. And this goes back to just what we were talking about, these classic styles that have been around for hundreds of years with the four base ingredients. They're actually really hard to do well because you can't – there are no adjuncts. There's no cocoa nibs or barrel aging or fruit. You really have to focus on those four key ingredients and getting those classic styles right. So you're going to start seeing a lot of pilsners, hefeweizens, lagers, light, crisp, refreshing beer – like you would find at the Civil Life or Urban Chestnut. And then beer festival season is rapidly approaching. Four Hands Brewing kicks off its Lupulin Carnival this year on April 1st. And then we have a dozen beer festivals listed throughout the year in our Guide to Beer, which is our March issue on stands now, including Heritage Festival, Microfest, Indie Hop. And I'm willing to bet we'll see both of these two breweries at most of them.
Yeah, as many as we can handle.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
I think I saw two plumbers dressed as Mario and Luigi at the Halloween party.
No, that was actually another brewery. We were Spaceballs.
Oh, that's right. You guys were Spaceballs.
It would have been too easy to do Mario and Luigi.
There was Spaceballs, and then there was Star Wars, and then there was Mario and Luigi, and I started getting everybody mixed up. The Halloween party is a great one.
Sounds like it. Well, you don't have to walk far or drive far to find one of these establishments in the St. Louis region, no question about it. Robert, a final thought you want to leave us with?
No, I'm good.
Drink beer, play games.
Give us your address.
We're located in St. Charles, just off of 70 and First Capital, 2236 First Capital Drive. We open March 18th, so come in.
Alrighty.
Drink beer, play games.
Abby?
Yeah, so Third Whale Brewing, we're slated to open up either late April or early May. So far, cross your fingers, we're on that timeline, 4008 North Service Road in St. Peter's. So just Cave Springs and 70 on the north side of 70. So come out, just follow us on our social media sites so that you can know when we're opening up. And if you're good with mudding or painting, we'll take your help any day.
Well, it's an exciting time for you both, I know, getting this started. Good luck to you.
Thank
Catherine,
you.
Thank you.
Final thought from you.
Pick up the Sauce Guy De Beer to learn more about these guys and follow Sauce on Facebook and Twitter. We just had a sneak peek of Two Plumbers go up, and I'm hoping to visit Third Wheel soon. So we're excited about the beer scene in this town, and we look forward to continuing to cover it.
Thanks to Catherine Claney, managing editor of Sauce Magazine, and Abby Spencer of Third Wheel Brewing, along with Robert Schoengert of Two Plumbers Brewing and Arcade. By the way, our congratulations to two local chefs stepping into the national spotlight for the second year in a row. Kevin Nash, and chief owner of Sydney Street Cafe and Peacemaker Lobster and Crab, and Kevin Willman, chief owner of Farmhouse, have made it to the final round of the James Beard Best Chef Midwest Awards to be announced in early May. You can read Nancy Fowler's story about them at stlpublicradio.org. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. Arts and culture programming on St. Louis On the Air is funded in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.